WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Maria Lee. A 15-year-old Manassas Park High School student has been charged with making threats to kill.
Manassas Park police say the Manassas Park High School sophomore posted something on Instagram Thursday night about shooting up the school the next day. Once they figured out whose account it was, they interviewed him and his parents and found out the threat wasn't credible. They searched the kid's house and didn't find a gun. The school system closed all buildings yesterday and had students do remote learning. Police say these kinds of threats are taken very seriously and investigated fully. This is one of a few threats to school systems in our region recently. Heather Curtis on WMAL and WMAL.com.
Several tornadoes ripped across western Kentucky overnight, causing Governor Andy Beshear to declare an emergency. He says as many as 100 people may be dead, many lost when a candle factory in the small town of Mayfield was hit.
It is tragic. This is a candle factory. There were about 110 people in it at the time that the tornado hit it. We believe we'll lose at least dozens of those individuals.
Several other states were hit by tornadoes overnight. Multiple workers trapped at an Amazon warehouse in Edwardsville, Illinois, following a structural collapse that happened as that severe weather rocked the area.
Ambulances keep coming. The first responders keep coming. The building, part of the building, is gone. You can just see nothing but metal pillars. And I actually spoke to a woman not too long ago whose nephew works at this Amazon plant, and she said that thankfully he was outside when the tornado hit this plant, but he says the entire building is gone on the other side that we cannot see right now.
The back of the building is literally gone.
That just paints you a picture about what she saw earlier. I mean, there is nothing but first responders here trying to help out. We are told over 20 departments are here.
Correspondent Amelia Mugavero. The worst vulnerability in years may be hitting your computer right now.
Computer security pros are scrambling to patch a software flaw called Log4Shell. If it's not fixed, it can let hackers and criminals into networks where they can steal data or plant malware. Some of the first signs of the flaw's exploitation showed up in the online game Minecraft. Players had been using it to execute programs on other people's computers. A vice president from the cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike says people are scrambling to patch. Microsoft says it issued a software update for Minecraft users, but researchers say servers used by Apple, Amazon, and Twitter may still be vulnerable. Jill Nato, Fox News.
WMAL Sports, the Caps fell to the Penguins last night 4-2. They'll take on the Sabres tonight in Buffalo. WMAL Traffic and Weather next. WMAL Traffic and Weather. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Beltway in Virginia, in Annandale, the express lanes northbound, road construction, roadways down to one lane between the express lanes entrance on the south end and 66. Now, on 66 westbound in Centerville, there is construction. Two lanes are blocked right at 28. That's the Centerville exit, exit 53. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, all lanes are clear on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Very warm and windy out ahead of a strong cold front. Temperatures today near 70 degrees, which would be a record high for the day. Also have the chance for some showers and storms, some gusty storms along the cold front later on this evening. Thinking anytime after 5 o'clock, continuing through 10, 11 o'clock tonight, a wind advisory has been issued for the entire D.C. area. Highs tomorrow cooler under mostly sunny skies near 50 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligon at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 51 right now at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
105.9 FM, it is a Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us each week. He's the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning to you, and I'm glad it's the weekend.
Some big names moving around a little bit here, and one's staying in, one's getting back in, and one's on the way out. Tell us what's going on.
Well, where do we start? First of all, Devin Nunes, congressman from California, former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, and slated to be the chairman of the Tax Writing Ways and Means Committee if Republicans win the House next year. But it's not to be. After 10 terms in Congress and at the age of 48, Nunez said, out of here. He's resigning at the end of the month to become the CEO of the new Trump media company. In other words, Donald Trump's efforts to get back in cyberspace after being banned by Twitter and other outlets. So, it's quite an endeavor. It's a lot of money, but it's with someone very loyal to the former president. Steve Bannon once called him Donald Trump's second biggest ally in Congress. The reason behind this, California sources tell me, is that the redistricting process is going on in California, and the 22nd district, long represented by Mr. Nunez, is soon going to be toast. So for all the promises of power, he might not have been returning. At the same time, David Perdue, a former senator from Georgia and a loyalist to President Trump, announced that he would oppose Republican Governor Brian Kemp for renomination. The first time a Republican governor in the Peach State has faced a primary like this. I might add that David Perdue stood with the president when he was challenging the outcome and the voting procedure in Georgia. Brian Kemp pronounced it fair and that the state's electoral votes went to Joe Biden. So there's a score to settle. One postscript on this. As soon as David Perdue announced and Donald Trump endorsed him, he was nearly tied in the polls with the incumbent governor. Finally, in the end of the week, Democratic Attorney General Letitia James of New York turned politics in the state upside down when she announced she would not run for governor after all. This was a big boost to Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul. And, of course, Letitia James is known nationwide as someone who wants to depose and possibly put Donald Trump under oath for his business dealings in the Empire State. One more thing. Kathy Hochul still has two primary opponents, and reports were that Letitia James could not get any traction, could not get any organized for the campaign. In any way, she's out of it.
So, John, we've been hearing about Build Back Better now for a long, long time, and it's starting to look like Joe Manchin will be the Grinch that stole BBB, but it will be much to the joy of probably most Americans.
Well, I'll tell you, it had a costly price tag on it. The last one that we saw being $1.3 trillion. This is buried from time to time. In any event, when he spoke earlier this week to executives of the Wall Street Journal, Senator Manchin made it clear that he was not going to support what he called an aspirational bill at this point. He said that it would not alleviate the problem of inflation currently at record high levels over a period of decades. Moreover, he pointed out that the paid leave that is contained in the measure is too costly. Overall, while the president and Senate leaders have brought the price of BBB down, it has been not enough to satisfy the most important customer, the gentleman from West Virginia. One other thing that isn't mentioned in many reports, Senator Kristen Sinema of Arizona is also undecided on this measure, and in order to win, Democrats have to get all 50 votes of their senators to permit Vice President Kamala Harris to cast the tie-breaking vote. Right now, it doesn't look like she'll have that opportunity.
Russian troops amassed on the border of Ukraine. Talk a little bit about the political side of this in terms of the Senate, the House, the administration. Can there be some consensus here against Russia, at least?
Well, more and more. Lawmakers of both parties are moving into the position of we have to stand by Ukraine, but without sending troops in if the Russians strike. Rather, and President Biden made this very clear in his virtual summit with Vladimir Putin, there would be crippling economic sanctions added to the sanctions we already have on the Russian bear if an attack on Ukraine is imminent and executed. In addition, the EU has weighed on this. There's also been talk that they might want to get a promise from Ukraine not to join NATO, something that Vladimir Putin has said must be off the table completely. Then, of course, there's the question, does the U.S. interfere with the sovereignty of another nation and tell it what group it can join or who it can associate with? Again, the matter is much more complicated. One other thing, a former diplomat who has observed Vladimir Putin points out that he makes an aggressive move every time an American president appears weak. He went into Esecha and seized that from Georgia in 2008 when George W. Bush was then a lame duck president with weeks to go in the White House. More recently, in 2014, he struck and seized Crimea, formerly a part of Ukraine, and that was done at a time when Barack Obama had suffered in the midterm elections and Republicans controlled both houses of Congress. Polls show that President Biden's popularity is at a very low point at this time, and this same diplomat said if Vladimir Putin is going to move on Ukraine, he wouldn't be surprised if it happens sooner or later, and possibly this month.
Well, John, there was one thing this week that Democrats and Republicans could agree on, and that was the respect and admiration for the late Senator Bob Dole. And for people that may not be that familiar with him, the highlights of his career, because he had a huge impact for the second half of the 20th century.
He certainly did. He came back from Anzio in Italy in 1945, severely wounded. And thanks to family and friends in his hometown of Russell, Kansas, he received an operation that saved his right arm, but he was never able to use it again. He put himself through the University of Kansas and its law school, and then went on to serve in local elected office for 10 years. Remember, this was someone who could not even shake hands, but he had a phenomenal political career. He went to the House of Representatives in 1960, to the Senate in 1968. Richard Nixon liked Dole, a fellow self-made man and political gut fighter, and made him Republican National Chairman. He defended Nixon right up to the very end in the Watergate scandal, and that nearly cost him his Senate seat in 1974. When he won narrowly, he proposed to then Federal Trade Commissioner and future cabinet officer and senator Elizabeth Hanford, later Elizabeth Dole, by saying, well, now I know I've got a job for the next 6 years. He was vice presidential nominee to Republican President Gerald Ford in 1976, and they lost a close race to Jimmy Carter and Walter Mondale. Many said that Dole's debate with Mondale was his undoing when he commented about Democrat wars at the end of it. He mellowed under President Reagan, became finance chairman in the Senate, and Senate Republican leader eventually. If there was something out to compete for, Bob Dole was there. And he almost made it to the White House, but he just couldn't close the deal. In 1988, Vice President George H.W. Bush seemed like Reagan's third term. And after the stormy New Hampshire primary, Dole's path to the White House was shut down. He finally did become the Republican nominee in 1996, but by then, time and events moved beyond him. The greatest generation that he embodied had essentially retired, and Bill Clinton, the first president born after World War II, won with ease. In his twilight years, Bob Dole was anything but retired. Dole Foundation helped many of the handicapped, people like himself. He also was the driving force behind the World War II Memorial. And after it was dedicated, every weekend one could find Bob Dole sitting on a bench greeting visiting World War II veterans. And in many cases, his foundation paid for them to come to Washington. He loved it all, and they loved him. A parting note, the last time I spoke to Bob Dole, I reminded him that my wife, Colleen, had been his Michigan campaign chairman, and her sister, Ann, had been his director of events. Without missing a beat, he said, "Well, you hug them both for me. Tell them 88 would have been our year." And he was right. Had he been nominated in 1988, he almost surely would have succeeded Ronald Reagan. It was just that when he was nominated, it was all over for him at the time. Bob Dole did everything but become president, and did so as a gentleman with a great sense of humor. He won't be forgotten.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you so much. Cheryl Atkinson's coming up next on the Saturday Morning Update, but first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, Interloop and Outerloop in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, no delays, no construction, and no crashes. If you're traveling between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway or on 95, northbound and southbound lanes are at the posted speed limit. In Prince George's County, on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, all clear on the eastbound side and on the westbound side. At the Bay Bridge, two lanes headed east and three lanes are coming west. And on 270 in Montgomery County, no delays between the Beltway and Frederick. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Very warm and windy out ahead of a strong cold front. Temperatures today near 70 degrees, which would be a record high for the day. Also have the chance for some showers and storms, some gusty storms along the cold front later on this evening. Thinking anytime after 5 o'clock, continuing through 10, 11 o'clock tonight. A wind advisory has been issued for the entire D.C. area. As we head later on overnight, winds will diminish some, still breezy as we get through early tomorrow morning. Lows back in the 30s to near 40 degrees. Highs tomorrow cooler under mostly sunny skies near 50 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligon at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
54 degrees in the nation's capital, 721 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Thank you very much for joining us. And we have Cheryl Atkinson joining us every week. She is the host of Full Measure. That's every Sunday morning, 10 o'clock, ABC 7. And Cheryl, it's great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Over the past month or two, we've seen a lot of emphasis in the media on what's happening in the courts, where they are not holding criminals who are brought in, and sometimes they're let out on their own recognizance, and then they resurface within a week or two, causing death or injury or continuing their crime sprees. And that's not the only problem in the courts. And you've got another one that you're looking at tomorrow.
Well, you know, even without the bail reform issue, because of COVID, some of the jails and prisons were being emptied out when they wouldn't have a certain criminals. There was also a backlog on the civil side when the courts were shut down. And I'm talking about that on Full Measure tomorrow. The idea that some courts, they were all handled things so differently depending on where you were, but some courts that already had a backlog of cases, well, when they shut down for COVID, that just really threw everything into a loop. And I'm going to Colorado to talk to their top lawyer there about how they kind of handled this there. But we're branching out and talking about other states too, because judges in places where the court systems are clogged, they're urging in some cases people to settle. They're pushing them to handle these cases in a different way because they're saying things like, you're not going to get a trial date for another year or two, and we don't want to have to bring jurors in who've already spent time missing work because of COVID. They're going to be worried about their livelihood. I mean, these are things that really, you know, shouldn't concern the people using the justice system, how it's going to impact a juror, inconvenience a juror, or that they're not going to get a court date for a couple of years. And Rick, it's also called into question what constitutes a speedy trial. Because when you're talking about criminal defendants, some of them are arguing, probably rightly so, that if they have to wait an extra year or some long, prolonged period of time to have a trial, does that qualify under the Constitution as a speedy trial? So far, I believe the courts have said these people can be held longer or their trials can be put off longer. And then that puts pressure on the judge. Well, should we let a criminal defendant who's not convicted of anything, should we let them out in the meantime? So These are some of the pressures that are happening on our court system, even though the country is largely opened back up.
We see Russian troops massing at the border of Ukraine, but that's not the only tension that we seem to be having between Russia and the United States. And you look at one that we might not be so familiar with.
Yeah, I didn't know much about this, but Scott Thuman went to Alaska for us. He's going to be reporting on this tomorrow. And the Coast Guard is sort of on the front line up there in the Arctic, where these are really valuable lands for fishing and oil. And it turns out China, Russia, and the United States, we're all up there competing for these resources and patrolling our area. And there have been some tense near misses, you might call it, with Russia in the last year or two. And then together, we're all looking, meaning we and the United States, at China as they try to become dominant in this arena as well. So Scott Thuman's going to tell us about all of that.
With the Jussie Smollett verdict this week, we've seen yet another example of how the media misrepresented, misreported, and now obviously is embarrassed, and they're just going to kind of sweep over all of the coverage that they gave Jussie Smollett and that attack by the MAGA supporters. It's just another reminder of how slanted the media is. And you authored Slanted. That's your latest book. And, you know, you've seen a lot recently in this media coverage and lack of media coverage. Where does this go from here, Cheryl? Is there ever going to be accountability? I mean, you lay out all these examples in the book.
Well, there are many more. And, yes, I guess you could say there was some accountability because ultimately he wasn't going to be tried, Smollett, but he was tried. And ultimately he was found guilty of something. But what happens to those whose reputations were harmed? I mean, he was very nonspecific with the allegations. He just claimed falsely that these were MAGA supporters. But that sort of just harms the whole movement, which then again, wasn't that the point at the time, to controversialize Donald Trump supporters. And there were quite a few cases. And if I get a chance, you know, I've kind of written about them before, but I'll try to aggregate them on my website at CherylAtkinson.com to remind us. There have been numerous high-profile cases where people claimed, particularly when President Trump was first elected, that they had been attacked by Trump supporters who were wearing red hats and whatnot. And in many of those cases, which we've cataloged, those accusations proved to be completely false. And the follow-up is never, you know, garners as much tension as the original complaints about it. But again, as a journalist, when I hear any of these stories about claims that somebody did something, it's not that it's not necessarily true. It might be true, but I certainly withhold my judgment, particularly when people are supposedly wearing red hats and saying, you know, they love Donald Trump while they're supposedly doing something horrible to somebody else or being so obvious about it. There's reason to think to yourself, is this sort of a counter operation? There are plenty of those going on where someone's trying to, again, controversialize somebody by making it look the way it's not.
Cheryl Atkinson, host of Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. As always, Cheryl, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Rick.
Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland right after the 7:30 news with Maria Leaf.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Maria Leaf. Tornadoes ripping across the southeast and midwest overnight.
One tornado is what we probably saw that has caused most of the damage. A really large, long-track tornado, likely on the ground for over about 200 miles. So they'll go out and do that investigation to see if it was on the ground that long, but it would be talking about maybe one of the longest tornado tracks we've ever seen in this country, at least on record. Now, that was overnight. When these storms happen overnight, they're especially deadly. People aren't aware. They don't have as much kind of warning in these, and you can't get any visual cue that you have a tornado coming. And also in December, sometimes people aren't nearly as aware of what's going on.
Fox meteorologist Rick Reitmuth. President Joe Biden will award the Medal of Honor next week to three U.S. soldiers who fought in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The soldiers are Sergeant First Class Christopher Salees, an Army Ranger who died after stepping in between Taliban fighters and a U.S. helicopter evacuating wounded in 2018. Master Sergeant Earl Plumley, a Special Forces soldier who fought off insurgents in Afghanistan in 2013. And Sergeant First Class Alwyn Cass, Nash, who suffered fatal injuries in Iraq while rescuing fellow soldiers from a burning vehicle in 2005. The three will be recognized at a White House ceremony on December 16th. WMAL Traffic and Weather next. WMAL Traffic and Weather. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Virginia side of the Beltway in Annandale. Express lanes northbound. Road construction. Roadway down to one lane between the Beltway Express Lane entrance on the south end and 66. Now on 66 westbound in Centerville, you're going to find road construction. Two lanes are closed right at 28. That's the Centerville exit, exit 53. On 95 in Virginia, you shouldn't find any delays between the Beltway and Fredericksburg on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And in D.C., 295, 395, and 695, all lanes are clear and at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Very warm and windy out ahead of a strong cold front. Temperatures today near 70 degrees, which would be a record high for the day. Also have the chance for some showers and storms, some gusty storms along the cold front later on this evening. Thinking anytime after 5 o'clock, continuing through 10, 11 o'clock tonight, a wind advisory has been issued for the entire D.C. area. Highs tomorrow cooler under mostly sunny skies near 50 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligon at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
52 at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:37 Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
All right. Headline, Washington Post. Putin keeps Washington guessing as U.S. huddles with allies to prevent Ukraine invasion. And I think one of the very serious questions about this is, if there were to be some kind of an invasion and a military conflict, what would that look like between the Russia and the NATO troops?
Well, it's not going to be NATO yet, but it's a great question by the fact that the conditions there are miserable. And much like many other things the U.S. media fails to cover, the war there has never really ended. Since 2014, Rick, the annexation of Crimea, the conflict's continued. It's been bloody. 14,000 people have died. So as much as, you know, we're all concerned about our little, you know, hemisphere of the world, things over there have never settled down. And this is why, if you recall, President Trump and his folks did insist on sending lethal aid, because there was lethal conflict going on. And so it's more about what are going to be what's going to be the scope of the new conflict. Will there be major, what we would call in the military, decisive engagements where you have massive numbers of units rolling across the terrain? And this terrain is it's very similar to, you know, what we have in kind of the central part of the United States. It's a lot of it's open. A lot of it's very much open agrarian space where they have things for crops. But much of what's going on this minute right now, it's very much static trench warfare. Some cases they have spaces, basically static defense positions set up to prevent more incursion. And in other instances, it's very guerrilla-like. It's very much, you know, like having small units going and terrorizing and taking small territory. And right now it's much about the Donbass area, which is what is really being pushed for by the Kremlin for direct control. So much of this right now is it's not really a cold war, it's not really a hot war. It's a small war that continues to simmer, and the question becomes, does it go hot sometime later this month or early next?
So the big two-hour call on Tuesday between President Biden and President Putin, was there a winner?
Yeah, a Putin. Look, it's funny that everybody keeps saying we don't know what Putin wants. We know what Putin wants. They just don't want to accept it. This is one of those grand ironies. This is the DC two-step, Rick. You know, the audience knows what I'm talking about. Everybody knows what Putin wants. They just, nobody wants to say it. Putin wants to re-insinuate the Soviet Empire onto the current Russian Republic, and he's doing that little by little. The question is, the only question is, how much of a bite is he going to take this time? So, I get so fed up with all of these Washington do-nothings who are just afraid, especially Jake Sullivan, to speak the truth. So what really came out of that call, I think, Rick, is Putin gloating. Putin's enjoying the moment of having the attention and having the world all kind of hot and bothered about what he may or may not do. He knows what he's going to do. We know what he's going to do. The question is the scope. So this is where I think Biden clearly lost him, looking him in the eyes, as Jake Sullivan said, and saying, we're willing to do things now that we weren't willing to do in 2014 means absolutely nothing, because nothing they're anticipating that they're willing to do is going to deter Putin at all. So Putin basically got what he wanted, got some limelight, got to enjoy watching the president kind of fumble around. So that's the call was completely ineffectual.
But what about these serious consequences and the sanctions that Biden and Sullivan talk about?
Yeah, they've already taken troops off the table. They've taken other things off the table that relate to direct kinetic or direct consequence actions. They're talking about diplomacy. They're talking about economics. One of their big things is the instant pay system that Russia's on right now. Ooh, Russia won't get its money right away. Let me tell you something, Rick. The Russians are very good about being patient, and they're supplying a lot of oil to the Europeans right now. So I'm pretty sure the Russians are going to get paid no matter how they get paid. So by laying it all out, by saying these are all the things we're going to do, and you better be afraid, Putin's already planning around them. Putin's already preparing to deal with them and move on to his next objective. That's how completely feckless the Jake press conference was and what they're contemplating right now. It's just completely, again, Putin just could care less probably at this point.
So there are reports out of Europe, and I don't know how much credibility to put in them, but in the reports, they suggest that President Biden may press the Ukraine President Zelensky to cede autonomy to a portion of Ukrainian lands controlled by Russian-backed separatists. Is that something that you could envision happening?
Yeah, shades of Russian collusion. Who's working for Putin now? So one of the things that's kind of been postulated is that Biden had a similar call with the Ukrainian president where he went through and laid out all the issues, and there are conflicting. I'll give the Biden administration the benefit of the doubt since we don't know for 100%. One of the current beliefs is that President Biden pushed President Zelensky to basically give up territory. Neville Chamberlain, 1939, comes to mind. So this is where we're at, where I think they've tried their best to really get Putin to back down. Didn't work. And now the next option is see if they can get territory to be given up as part of a concession. And it's dangerous. It won't work. But I do believe that in the desperation that the White House now sees itself within, I'm sure that may have been something on the table for Putin. I mean, for Biden to say to Zelensky as part of what he wants to do, that is Biden to stop the upcoming conflict.
Only got a minute or so left, Tony, but I want to turn to China real quick because there's a headline out in the freebeacon.com that China vows to open fire on U.S. troops that come to Taiwan's aid. Whew.
This is new. We've not had direct threats like this before. So this, I don't believe for a minute the Russians and Chinese are coordinating, but man, oh man, are they watching each other and the reactions of the United States as each pushes the envelope with this president. And so the Chinese now feel very comfortable speaking directly, calling out Jake Sullivan by name, talking about how feckless he is. So it's kind of like, Rick, at this point, nobody's afraid of this White House, and the Chinese are even saying that. They're directly saying that. They're threatening U.S. troops, and at this point, I don't believe the Chinese are getting ready to go hot. I don't believe they're going to be able to jump right in sometime within the next 6 months and do an invasion of Taiwan, but that is their aspiration. They clearly want to dominate the Pacific Rim, and again, when whatever happens with Putin happens, Rick, I think the Chinese are going to be more emboldened to do whatever they're going to do in the Pacific, and that's going to be even more aggressive. So,
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and what's on the Thought to Action podcast this week, Tony?
Well, we're going to be talking about Putin. Imagine that. We get a whole special Thought to Action just kind of outlining all the issues we just talked about regarding Zelensky, Putin, and what may happen in the next 30, 60 days within Ukraine. So I think people will enjoy it.
Tony, thank you so much. You can find out more at londoncenter.org. 7:46, Saturday morning update on WMAL, LBDs, and the WMAL Traffic Center. Then we'll chat with KT McFarland.
In Maryland, on the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, literally bridge to bridge, you're not going to hit your brakes. All lanes are at speed. Now, if you're traveling between the two Beltways, whether it's the BW Parkway or 95, no delays northbound and southbound. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, all lanes are clear east and west. At the Bay Bridge, two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And on 270 in Montgomery County, you're not going to find any slowdowns between the Beltway and Frederick. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. Very warm and windy out ahead of a strong cold front. Temperatures today near 70 degrees, which would be a record high for the day. Also have the chance for some showers and storms, some gusty storms along the cold front later on this evening. Thinking anytime after 5 o'clock, continuing through 10, 11 o'clock tonight, a wind advisory has been issued for the entire D.C. area. As we head later on overnight, winds will diminish some, still breezy as we get through early tomorrow morning. Lows back in the 30s to near 40 degrees. Highs tomorrow cooler under mostly sunny skies near 50 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligon, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
53 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Saturday morning update, 7:49. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you know, you can look at the news this week and you see inflation reaching its highest levels in 40 years. We see the tensions increasing at the Ukraine border. We see tensions increasing with China. We see just absolute acrimony between the Republicans and the Democrats. So let's change it up and talk about something positive. And it's something that is happening today in Philadelphia.
Yeah, well, it's actually not in Philadelphia this year. It's in the Meadowlands in New Jersey.
Oops, sorry about that.
No, it's historically always in Philadelphia, but today it's a unique experience in New York. So it's Army plays Navy. Now, you know, I was struck last night when Brian Williams signed off on MSNBC, and he said, never have I seen the country in such, you know, such acrimony of the left and the right, and I'm really fearful for my country, and it's not the America I recognize. And I kept thinking back to the Army-Navy game, and I wrote a piece on Fox News a decade or so ago about the miracle of the Army-Navy game, and it's America's first oldest football rivalry. It's a national game. It's the cadets at West Point football team playing the Navy midshipmen. And it's for the students, it's like the biggest deal of the entire year. They go around, the Navy midshipmen go around all year long saying, beat Army, beat Army, beat Army, every time they turn a corner. And the same thing happens at West Point. And they have hijinks against each other. I mean, this year, the cadets at West Point tried to steal the Navy mascot, which is a goat, and they stole the wrong goat. But it carries on, and it's carried on for, gosh, I don't know, 175 years or something. At the end of the game, it's never terrific football because the guys who play, they're not professional quality football players. They're not going on to the leagues. They're usually pretty little. They're probably 50, 100 pounds lighter than some of the people they play all year long. But they're students as well, because some of them are majoring in physics, and yet they're still playing football every single day, practicing. But at the end of the game, no matter who wins, who loses, and it's the entire brigade of midshipmen and the entire cadet corps of West Point who attend. So there are 1,000 students from each side, as well as the people in the stands. And at the end of the game, you know, normally at the end of any football game, you see people leave early, especially if it's not a close game. And, you know, people are talking, people are cheering. But there's nothing, there's nobody's really paying attention to the field. At the Army-Navy game, everybody in the stands stands up, and they're silent. And the winning team walks over to the team, the losing team's side, where there, remember, 1,000 students assembled, and sings the anthem shoulder by shoulder with the people they've just played football against. They sing the anthem of the school that loses. So let's assume this year Navy wins. Navy walks over to the Army side, and they put their helmets in under their arms, and they stand side to side with the Army football players, and they sing the Army anthem. And then the whole field, winners and losers, walks over to the winning side, and they sing the winning side's anthems. To me, that's a symbol of what's best about America. You know, we fight like cats and dogs during election season, and seemingly now we fight like cats and dogs all the time. Republicans versus Democrats, progressives versus establishment Democrats, Republicans and conservative Republicans. I mean, everybody's arguing all the time 24/7. Well, we're everything. And yet, we don't come together. We should take that example of the Army-Navy game and come together as a nation to face these crises, because I'm very worried that this winter we're going to see major international crises taking advantage of our domestic weakness.
Well, tell us a little bit about the emotion in the stands. I mean, here in D.C., if you go to a Washington football team game, and if they lose, you'll see some people in the stands are crying in the stands. But that's the losing team. At the Army-Navy game, it's different.
It's a total, the people who go, first of all, probably have an affiliation with the Army or Navy. My daughter, for example, she's a representative for the Florida State House of Representatives. She's taking a delegation from the Florida State House. She's a Navy veteran. She went to the Academy. Her husband went to the Academy. She lettered all 4 years at the Academy and crew. She's leading a delegation from the Florida House of Representatives, and they're all going to cheer for Navy. And there's a representative from the Senate in Florida in the state legislature, and he's an Army veteran. He's going to lead a delegation of senators, Florida state senators. And they're all going together today to the game, and they're going to sit in the same box, and you're going to see them. One side jumps up and cheers when Navy does well, and then the other side jumps up and cheers when Army does something well. And yet, they all come together as their Florida state legislators. Florida is the best governed state in the union. And to me, again, this is what it's supposed to be about. You're really emotionally involved in this game. And yet at the end, you put that aside and you say, hey, there's something more important here. And particularly during when we were at war in Afghanistan and Iraq, it was particularly poignant to watch Navy and Army at the end of the game stand side by side together as brothers, because they knew they were going into battle together. And I just so wish the country could just get out of that sense of unity, because we're very distracted by our, and the noise is getting louder, not less. And again, my concern is that this winter we're going to get a foreign policy punch of 1-2 punch, that Russia's going to make a move on Ukraine and China's going to make a move on Taiwan, and the United States will be pretty much helpless and distracted with a president who's in obvious cognitive decline and in popularity climb falling even faster, and that the United States will look to the world and to ourselves as incapable of taking control of the situation and turning it to our advantage.
I want to read one line out of your op-ed piece at the foxnews.com website. If you looked up at the stadium screens, you could see that many of the players had tears in their eyes. If you looked at your neighbors in the stands, they did too, because what everyone in that stadium witnesses at every Army-Navy game is the miracle that is America, that after the fiercest of contests, we can rise above the victory or the defeat and come together as one nation. And you can Google the piece. It's at the foxnews.com website, the opinion page, The Miracle of the Army-Navy Game, authored by K.T. McFarland. And K.T., thank you so much for some really uplifting and enlightening hope this morning. Much appreciated.
Thank you. So if you watch anything, even if you don't watch the whole game, watch the end of the game, because watch that miracle happen.
K.T. McFarland, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:58, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. That's it for us. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news with Maria Leaf.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington.
The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media Station.